Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 129 of DM Discussions, the podcast for players and DMs alike, where we cover a wide variety of topics to help you with your games. I'm your host, Ryan Breeder, and with me, as always, is my mostly well co-host, Ben Bunhoffer.
Mostly. I'm mostly well at night, mostly.
He has sexy deep voice tonight.
I mean, I can really lean into it if I want to, but no, we're going to try not to, because I don't know if that's going to actually make it worse or not. But yeah, it's a good thing that we didn't record originally on Monday or yesterday, because it was way worse than it is now. And yesterday it actually hurt to talk. So
yeah, this is why this episode is slightly delayed in coming, yep. But it is here now. We're here. We're excited to talk about some things. We've got a topic we've been wanting to talk about for a bit. We've got a listener question topic mm-hmm. that I want to go over as well, because it is very, very good. So Ben, let's dive in a little bit. Our first topic of the evening is going to be what happens when you're starting a game out and you come up with this awesome backstory, and then you look at it and you go, this is a backstory of someone who's level 20. Or you hand it to your DM and your DM goes, level one is not the right fit for this backstory.
Yeah, this is the. I really want to play Dungeons and Dragons, and my power fantasy is being I'm this amazing knight who has killed dragons and defeated gods, and I'm doing all this stuff, and I'm joining this campaign now as a level one character who can die in literally just one crit from any enemy ever. Yeah, it doesn't work all that way. But the thing is that it doesn't mean that you can't have a really cool and good backstory. And that's one of the things that we need to kind of talk about, you know, ways that you can kind of fit it in. Not exactly like cheating the system, but ways to kind of make it make sense. And I've come up with a few ideas. I'm sure you have too, but like one of the biggest and easiest ones that I can think of is, you know, you were powerful in some way before, and that power is no longer there. So why is it no longer there? Easiest thing is you were a paladin who broke your oath and boom, gone. You know, you're no longer blessed by your deity. You don't have those godly powers anymore. And you kind of have to work your way back up into, you know, what you're doing, whether it's, you know, trying to, you know, get favor of your god again. Maybe you're trying to become a paladin again. You know, it's a constant trial to get there, which adds a lot of really cool kind of story and gameplay to your character. Maybe you're switching, you know, to a different deity of choice or something. Or maybe you were so disillusioned with the gods that you don't want to have anything to do with them. You're just going straight on fighter now. Or, you know, anything else. Maybe you're, because you were so power hungry or something, you're switching and going to a warlock and you're kind of testing your feet in those kind of muddier waters and stuff. I mean, I love the idea of, you know, phenomenal cosmic power, but then losing all of it to start over again, start fresh. And it gives the DM a lot to play with, because you have a huge backstory that you can kind of pull from and take from and like confront, as well as a gigantic redemption arc, which I think would be very interesting to kind of put into the game.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think that's a really great way. Just the power lost fantasy. Not that you haven't been around for a little while, but your power was lost. Mm-hmm. Another one I really like is amnesia.
Yes.
And so basically what this is you, this is for you planners and preppers, right? I've got my character planned out all the way to level 20. I've got this big power fantasy behind him, but I can't start that at level one. So what do? The character has amnesia. Obviously, you've gotten your entire backstory written out. Your DM has that backstory, but your character then slowly remembers things as they level up. And so that allows you to have that huge backstory, but maybe you've forgotten it. Maybe you've forgotten how to do a lot of the things that you knew how to do, but you've got it all planned out. You've got these maybe epic deeds that you've done. Maybe certain people recognize you in a town and you're just like, no, I'm not that guy.
Exactly.
But then, yeah, as you level, and this can really connect in a story way too, your character begins to remember things, begins to put pieces together. And then that basically accounts for your leveling up as well.
Yeah. And the neat thing with that too is that as you're leveling up, you can play it in different ways. Like you can totally Jason Bourne it where it's like you're a monk or something. And then at level three, you learn, you know, your subclass or whatever it is that you're doing. And it could just be like you just do the thing, you know, as opposed to, you know, in some games they have to have some sort of, you know, canonical reason why you leveled up, or, you know, if you gain a new skill or something, it's something that you've worked on for a while, you know, have downtime with it. With this, it could be all like, you know, someone throws a knife at me as a monk, I catch it and throw it back just like as a instant reaction kind of thing. It's like, oh, I can do that. Okay, cool. You know, just kind of add that little bit of flavor in there too. But what's even more fun is, you know, if you want to explore it, when you hit those milestones and stuff, you can, you know, jump into some sort of flashback where you're acquiring the skill or being, you know, taught by your mentor how to do it or something along those lines. Kind of like, think like a Jedi Outcast or something like that, where, you know, you go through that game and you level up your different force powers and stuff by playing through your training of it from when you were, you know, a little kid. And this kind of, you know, gives you another avenue to explore that backstory and grow it more as you're kind of learning and remembering. And the cause for amnesia could be anything. It could be, you know, a spell that you had cast on yourself. So you would, you know, maybe forgot something that you did before. It could be, you know, with a warlock pact or even like, you know, some sort of clerical thing. You know, we saw this happen with Shadowheart in Baldur's Gate. You know, no
clerical
idea of her past.
Error.
Oh,
you might say.
I like that. That's great.
Oh, God.
And the thing is, too, is that that works with any sort of, you know, class that you can think of, because, you know, everybody can be hit in the head hard enough and forget what's going on. So, you know, that gives you a lot of kind of, you know, fun and different things to kind of go with. Another way, which is, you know, not exactly similar to amnesia, but it's also literally a new take on life, is, you know, maybe you're experiencing some sort or some form of reincarnation, whether you have access to memories of your previous life, or you are literally the same person, but you're in a new body or, you know, a new type of body, new frame or whatever, and you're not used to it at all. So you don't know exactly how it works or your connection. Like, this works extremely well with, like, say, a sorcerer or something, you know, going from one lineage to another. Like, let's say maybe you had a draconic bloodline in the past, but you're reincarnated into something different. And now you have, like, say, wild magic. You know, you can always go off of, yeah, you know, I used to cast fireball all the time. We'll do it now. I don't know how yet. I'm still working on those details, you know, just kind of like doing little things like that. Or, you know, just, again, you know, tie it to, you know, some sort of class specific thing, you know, especially with like wizards. You know, maybe they did some sort of transmogrification of themselves and just kind of wiped out a lot of their power or abilities or something that way. Again, with the warlocks are easy because you can do anything with a warlock, basically saying, you know, this is what the definition of the pact. I don't know anything. I don't have anything. Everything's gone brand new, or, you know, my power was shut off by my patron or something like that. You know, rogues work really well. You know, maybe you're undercover and you're going into an adventuring party, but you don't want to be so showy. So you're, you know, kind of just going with the basics until they start growing themselves. I mean, there's different ways to kind of, you know, take every class and twist it so that you're being held back in some form. It's kind of like in a game, didn't you play a full-fledged dragon, but you had to hold yourself back to, you know, not raise alarm or something like that. It could be something even as simple as that. You know, character-wise, you're only level 3. But experience-wise, you're not sharing your entire life with your party for some reason.
Yeah. No, I think that's really good. And that is a huge, huge way that you can kind of skirt around and still get that deep backstory while starting at low level. Another really good one, and this is more from the DM angle, if you're setting up your campaign for this, or you have a lot of players that love the deep backstories or want to really jump in with something like that, time travel.
Yeah.
Time travel is a really easy one where, and I've actually thought about doing this before, or I don't know if it was an actual play that I saw that did something like this. But essentially the very first session of the campaign was the players playing their level 20 characters. And then something happens. Big bad guy is there. They fail and reset time. And so the entire premise of the campaign then is they go all the way back to them. They have some knowledge of what is happening, but they are back to basics. Essentially, they are level 1 or level 2 or level 3 or something like that. They have to redo everything. They need to re-level up. They need to re-experience things. They need to try and prevent what happened in session 1 with some foreknowledge, essentially, of how to get there, and then try and take that different path to prevent XYZ from happening. So that's a really, really cool way, again, if you base your campaign around it, for being able to allow for those epic backstories to still have a place within starting a new game.
Yeah. If you completely overly simplify that, that is the story of Overcooked. Basically, you need to go back in time and learn how to cook. And putting that in some sort of D&D campaign stuff actually works really well. I think that's actually awesome. I love that idea too, because as the DM, as you're kind of running it too, you can decide, you know, obviously the spark that does that time travel, is it only the heroes that go back, or does the big bad go back as well? And they have to, you know, go and amass their army and, you know, potentially make something different and make changes themselves. You know, it kind of gives a lot of play in there, so that, you know, in all honesty, if you really enjoy the campaign, you could just start it over as many times as you want and just kind of play things out differently. And, you know, see how they kind of change and cascade through the future. Like, I love the idea of a Groundhog Day campaign where you have to do something like that. That would be insanely hard to do and do well. But, you know, one loop, that's awesome. I like that. That's cool. Maybe a second time, you know, don't make it like a years long campaign. Make it, you know, like maybe you have a month to play. You get to that point. If it doesn't work, goes back in time, then you try different things and get to that point again or something. Sorry, just by saying that, whole new ideas and campaigns shot in my head. You know how that works. This happens a lot with us on the show. Sometimes I talk out loud about ideas. Spoilers to my party or my group, we're not doing that. But that'd be cool. Maybe some, you know, short thing in the future or something. Be kind of neat.
Yeah, for sure. And then the other thing I get asked about a lot is playing, and this kind of ties in, playing characters that are already very old.
Mm-hmm.
Say, and I'm talking specifically more now for the longer lived races, like your dwarves, your halflings, your elves, especially. If your character is 100, 200, 300 years old, and how do you kind of jive that with being level 1 or level 2, right? And I think from a backstory standpoint, there's a lot of ways you can write something like that into it. When you have a longer lived race, and I think we've talked about this a little bit on an episode way back when, the sense of time for the character is not the same mm-hmm. as a human would see time. They tend to take things much slower, right? And they tend to kind of enjoy where they're at. So maybe if you're playing an elf, maybe they've been around for 200 or 300 years, but they were not adventuring in that time. Mm-hmm. Maybe they were studying. Maybe they were learning. I mean, it's very possible for a level one character to have a 14 or a 16 int or something like that, right?
Yeah.
It's very easy to go, yeah, my character was studying. My character was sightseeing or taking, or an ambassador or taking a trip. Maybe they are very versed in politics, but not so much with the blade. And now they are picking up a weapon for the first time, or studying magic for the first time, or something like that, right? Mm-hmm. To where it's very much can fit the, my sense of time is different than your sense of time. I accomplished in 150 years the equivalent of what you accomplished in 20.
Yeah.
Right. Just because that's how I see time. And you have to be constantly going because you know you only have 80 years or something like that. Mm-hmm. And so you're just constantly going, constantly learning. You have that sense of urgency behind you that the longer lived races may not. So that's just something to think about as you are creating your character, especially if it is you're wanting to start them older or a longer lived race or something like that.
Yeah. And adding on to that, too, you can also be like, you know, an apprentice who's been around for a while, or like a squire or something like that, where, you know, you're just kind of on the side to these grand adventures that have happened before. You know, you're essentially the NPC from the previous, you know, campaign or something like that, who is, you know, kind of tagging along and carrying all the equipment or something. You know, maybe your mentor died in a battle and you had to pick up their blade for the first time. And now you're continuing their trek or their quest or something along those lines. So it gives you, you know, context to situations or, you know, knowledge or information about places and stuff where, you know, someone just brand new noob who's I'm an adventurer today is, you know, not exactly, you know, in the know, but you're still learning as well and still have that, you know, fragility of a low level character of, you know, you're not as skilled because you weren't the one actually doing anything. Sure, you were being trained, but you know, you don't have the experience for it, which I think is a kind of a good way to kind of go around all that as well. And then lastly, for ideas that I had is just, you know, you were retired and you hung up the blade or whatever. And, you know, maybe they kidnapped your daughter and you had to, you know, pick up the camo again and go back into battle or something.
Is this D&D Taken?
You know, you do have a certain set of skills, like literally.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, and, you know,
I particularly like that if you're wanting to play like an older character, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Because obviously you can play an older character from the angle of, I was just a tavern keeper and this is my midlife crisis and I'm learning magic or I'm studying the blade or something like that. But yeah, then you could also very much have I'm 60 some years old or or 70 years old. And I used to be an adventurer, but I haven't used those adventuring muscles in 30 years mm-hmm. or 40 years. So the stuff will slowly come back to you, but you have to build back up to it. You have to build your strength up. You have to relearn all those things that you learned. Not that, like, you can't role play from that aspect of, oh yeah, I've been there, done that. I just might not be able to do that currently.
Yeah, exactly.
type thing.
Yeah, you know, as a 60-year-old dancer, maybe I can't do the splits right away. It takes a little kind of getting, you know, back into the habit before I can, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah. So I think there's a lot of leeway for beyond the norm, the more epic backgrounds or the more I've been around for a while or I've been there, done that, while still keeping within the bounds of I'm starting a campaign at like level 1, 2, or 3.
Yeah. And this just came to me, and I think it's a really stupid backstory, but it could be fun. You could be an adventurer groupie and show up after the fact of everything happening. So again, you were there, but you're horrible and you're bad and you can't do anything, but you showed up to the Dragon's Lair after. Yeah. It's like, you know, they go, they kill the dragon. You're there a day later after the dragon's already kind of, you know, decomposing and decaying and stuff. And you're like, oh, wow, look at this hoard. There's 20 gold over there, you know, because everything else has been taken out or something like that. And just like, you know, being a groupie and just kind of following along for a group of heroes or something until finally, again, you have to take up the mantle, or you finally get to a place first before they do. And you're like, oh, crap, this, you know, camp full of goblins has the mayor's son kidnapped and I'm the first one here. What do I do?
Yeah, I've never actually had to deal with this before.
Yeah, I kind of like that. It could be something fun. Yeah.
Yeah. How about you guys? Have you done something like this before? Have you made an epic backstory for a low level character? We'd love to hear about it. Shoot us an email. Hit us up in Discord. We'd love to hear the stories, because there's so many different ways that you can do stuff like this. Okay, speaking of Discord,
yes,
we had a listener question come in the past week or so, and I thought it was really, really good and something very much worth addressing. So this is from Multi. They've written in, and I will just read the question off, Ben, and then we'll jump into discussion. So the question goes, how do you think players should handle situations where their characters feel motivated to break from the rest of the party to do their own thing, but it's in a way that would disrupt the flow of a session or the group cohesion? I'll give an example. I'm in a game where my character learned that his son was in danger. I know my character would have stopped at nothing to address that, find and mourn his son immediately, but doing so would have meant I'd need to skip out on an event that was integral to the main plot happening that day, which the rest of the party was headed to. In the end, I decided to go with my party to stick to the plan and maintain a cohesive story, all while knowing in my heart my character would have done otherwise. But I didn't want my character to miss out on a big story beat either. I know there's a few options to split off a character temporarily, but at the end of the day, I also didn't want to eat up a ton of game time just doing my own side story. Any advice on how best to handle situations like these would be appreciated. So thank you, Multi, for writing in. And it's a great question.
Yes. Ben. Yeah, it really is. And I'm of two minds of this, because I mean, first of all, I feel for you. I would not want to go against what my character would do, because, you know, I'm all in for role playing and really getting into their mindset and everything. And I'm not talking about the it's what my character would do kind of like, you know, be a jerk kind of thing. Not that. But, you know, doing something that feels right and genuine to what your character would be able to do. On top of that, I don't want to miss out on, you know, the big events or the big, you know, set pieces that are going to be planned, especially as I'm running off and going, doing this, they're doing that. And I'm just kind of sitting there for the next hour and a half while, you know, they kind of play. That's not fun either. And like, I look at it and I don't know, obviously I wasn't there, so I don't know what's going on. To me, I think that contextually from the DM, it could have worked better so that you can tell that it wasn't like as an immediate threat to, you know, your character's son, or, you know, have, you know, a courier be available to warn them so you can give a coded message to say, let's meet here and we will handle this together or something like that. You know, just pepper in some things where if something so integral to a character is brought up that that would take precedence, that, you know, they don't have to just leave the party and just not play anymore, or, you know, take the spotlight away from this other event that's going to happen. I think that's more of a DMing choice with that. That being said, as the character, I mean, you really have to just kind of explore options to, you know, figure out what's going on. How important is this big set piece? There could be some really good role-playing opportunities to convince the rest of the group to come with you, find safety for your son, and a good DM would roll with that and incorporate the big event into that as well. So that way you kind of get the best of both worlds working together with that. So it, I don't know. It's a tough situation to kind of put it in. And I really think that it comes down to how the DM ends up handling the situation. What do you think, Ryan? I mean, it's a tricky one to put yourself in.
It is. I've played in a campaign where this came up multiple times. And number one, I think this partially depends on how long you've been playing, not real time, but how long your characters have known each other, mm-hmm. how close they are. What is the group dynamic? Because there are going to be times when you're just starting off, or I've known these people for a few weeks or a month or something like that, where running off to do someone's personal XYZ thing might not be what people care to do, or they might not have had enough time together for that to really be impactful, or for the other characters to care.
Mm-hmm.
Right, that much, because something bigger might be going on. And doing that can cause lots of problems and lots of friction, because then you are going, okay, it's the whole, okay, well, I want to play my solo thing over here because this is what my character cares about, and where the rest of the characters don't care about that thing and they're trying to do this thing over here. Mm-hmm. Right. And so that led to a lot of friction in the campaign I was playing in, because everyone was trying to do their own story threads. And again, this is partially a DM thing too, right? But everyone was kind of trying to do their own story threads, but the group hadn't been together long enough to care about each other's story threads. And so there wasn't a lot of hook for people to, you know, all in, go with them.
Yeah.
In my mind, as much as I love that you're like, people are thinking about that type of thing as their character, most of the time, personally, I would always err on the side of group cohesion,
mm-hmm.
versus solo play. Because at the end of the day, D&D is a team sport. It's not a solo game. There are solo RPGs if you want to play solo RPGs. But at the end of the day, D&D is a team sport. So if most of the characters are doing XYZ, I would almost always err on the side of doing XYZ with them, just from a group cohesion perspective and just for fun, right? Obviously, in situations like that, you can then go back. You could either in the moment say, kind of like you were mentioning, is there some way I can try and leave a note or leave a contact or, you know, something to that effect, or even afterwards, maybe once the group thing is over, talk to your DM, and then maybe the DM can help make that a priority.
Yeah.
For the next thing. Obviously, from a DM point of view, if you are running like the bigger thing or the thing that the group is going to, don't do anything bad to the other characters, in this case, son, while the group is gone, because that would just be a super dick move, because then that player has to suffer consequences for trying to keep group cohesion together.
Mm-hmm.
So that would probably be my biggest recommendation, is from a DM perspective, put that on pause, whatever's going on with the player's personal story, on pause until you can come back and get a good resolution to it after that character or that player kept group cohesion. As I said, I would almost always err on that side of things above trying to split off solo. Now, there are times to split the party, right? It didn't sound like this was probably one of those times, if there was a known big event that had been building up potentially for multiple sessions or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then going, no, I'm not going to do that. Again, that's a group cohesion thing. But once that type of thing is over, one of the things I love to do, either in downtime sessions or even just sometimes regular sessions, sometimes the party will split two and two. And then as a DM, make sure you hop back and forth between those different groups or the different people, if they're all four split up, to try and give people even time, not take super long, 10, 15, 20 minutes, and then hop to the next person, right? Yeah. You don't want people having to sit around and wait too long, but it is really good to have those character moments, those individual character moments at times, because they can lead to really good story development, especially if the characters have a lot of NPCs that you're playing,
mm-hmm.
that they have some sort of relation to, right? Because you want to build those relationships up. You just want to make sure that they do not dominate a session, and that you're trying to split your time relatively evenly. And there will be times, right, when one character might become a little more prominent than the others.
That's always what happens.
That happens. That's normal arc flow. But that's, as a DM, you have to watch for that to make sure that you're giving everyone their moment in the sun, and that it's not always dominated by a single character or a single player, right? Because that leans too heavily in one direction. But it's not bad to make sure that players do have their individual moments and do have their individual times in the sun. So one of the things that can be really good is downtime, right? Having some sort of a downtime session and to resolve things like this, because those are, downtime sessions are really good for hopping between players and either narratively figuring things out or straight up RPing interactions. And we had a, and I'll talk about this at the end of the episode, but we had a very, very cool downtime type session, my last session, where we were able to hop around between the characters and do a few, like, check off some boxes we've been needing to do, but also some very, very deep role play between certain characters that ended up being really good. So that's, I think that's probably my overall thought with splitting off or keeping things together, just because I've been in that situation before as a player, and I know that it can make things a lot harder on the DM if you try to just do your own thing, especially if there's something that is kind of obvious or something pre-planned or something like that. As a good DM, they will make sure to go back to that moment that you need and not do anything bad to whatever the piece they're looking for until you've gotten a chance to resolve it yourself.
Sorry. And as a DM too, don't drop any sort of side quest right before the big thing. Like, Ryan, I think you said that, but I mean, it really comes down to that. I mean, if this is how you feel the need to, you know, artificially up the stakes somehow, it's not the right way to do it, because you are putting in that potential rift. And as the DM, you're trying to also keep that party cohesion going. So while different side quests and different things can pop up for characters, that's perfectly great. But if they're really, you know, on the verge of going and doing something, don't drop an individual character's thing right there, unless the intention is for these things to combine together.
Yeah. And I completely agree. And it's one of those things too, where as a DM, you see the payoff, you see the larger scale of the plot, right? There's a big difference between dropping something that will be related or will kind of combine in from a story perspective versus, like you said, just dropping like a side thing out of nowhere and be like, oh, there's this thing too, by the way, that just happened to be here. Yeah. So no, I agree. I think there's a lot of that, but I love that. I think that really shows connection to your character. Mm-hmm. I think that really is good. It is just a good player, right? From a player point of view, because they're thinking about what would my character do in this situation.
Yeah. And even more so, not only does it show that they're connecting to the character, but they're connecting to the plot as well, because they know here's this important thing that's going to be happening. And even though in the email it's worded, you know, that you didn't want your character to miss out on the big story beat, that's it's more than that. It's the character knows they need to be there for that, like inside the story, not just, oh, my character needs to be there. It's they know that they're going to be depended on by the group to be in that situation and stuff. So like overall, like the conflict that your character felt is great. I mean, it sucks, but you know, it's great that you felt that because it really showed that you were connecting with the situation with your character. And I mean, I can get where, you know, having the choice between the two would tear you apart because of that. So like, you did everything great as far as I can tell. I mean, unless you're like, screw you guys, I'm going home, and then just left the game entirely. Maybe not the best option, but you know, we've always said no D&D is better than bad D&D. And if it was bad, then okay. But I think that's, you know, you had the right mindset. And if I'm not mistaken, I think that if you haven't yet, I think that you're going to be going and doing that big story beat. Otherwise you already did before, you know, switching lanes to go save the character's son. So yeah, good job.
And I think we need to make sure we separate this somewhat too, because there's these types of situations, but then there are specifically introduced DM moral quandaries.
Yes.
Which is a completely different situation from something like this, where it's not necessarily a group cohesion thing, although there might be dialogue back and forth, right? It's more of a, you can do X or Y.
Yeah, the trolley problem.
Yeah, but you cannot do both. And then as a group, then you're figuring out, which do I go to? Mm-hmm. Or are we splitting the party up in attempt to do both, but there's now a larger chance of failure?
Yeah.
Right. And so that's a completely different thing. And we've talked a little bit about this when we talk about high level D&D. In my mind, high level D&D is just as much about those types of things, mm-hmm. moral quandaries, as it is about fighting the super giant high level monsters.
Yep, exactly.
Right. So completely different thing. but a DM tool nonetheless, that is very much a legitimate thing that you have in your toolbox.
Yeah. And then one last thing that I just want to toss out there too. When you were talking about party cohesion, how, you know, in game time, it might be, you know, very, you know, very short, you know, like first couple days or whatever like that. Just remember that as a party member, you, if you want to play D&D, you do have to stick with those players somehow. So just try to figure out how to make it work for you in those early days until you get those bonds, because that's important. And that's not a DM's entire mission, is to give you reasons to stay together. You also have to choose to do that as a player. You can't be the rogue who, I don't trust anyone, I'm just not going to go with them, and I'm going to go do my own thing because that's my roguey rogueness and stuff. Yeah. Don't do that.
Yeah, I agreed. It's the social contract, mm-hmm. right?
Exactly.
It's the, I have my character has motivations, etc. But at the end of the day, I am playing this game with a group. Mm-hmm. And part of that social contract is playing with the group, right?
Yep. All there to have a good time together.
Yep. Yep. And again, as long as everyone is having fun, you're doing it right.
Yeah, exactly.
But thank you for writing in. And like Multi, if you have a question for the show, we have our email, or you can join our Discord, and we have a show questions section on the Discord that you can leave any show questions, and we will try to answer those throughout the episodes as we get the chance.
Yeah, we love it when you guys write in anyway. So give us stuff to talk about, because we like talking about D&D. I don't know if you noticed this or not.
It's true. Before we jump into the last bit, I wanted to do just as a mini supplemental talking point. And this was a really good video I stumbled across that I think has kind of been building in my mind now for like the last few years. And it's called An Open Letter to D&D Beyond. The video itself basically runs down a laundry list of issues they have with D&D Beyond, and I tend to agree with a lot of what the video has to say. Over the years, and I've been using D&D Beyond, and I know Ben, you have as well, mm-hmm. since basically its inception. It was one of the first of its kind type things, at least in the broad format that it was, this digital character sheet. Now, obviously, these have existed before, but this was a big company, or at least the license for a very big product, and was incredibly helpful and got me hooked on the digital version, being able just the so many quality of life or accessibility type things to make things so much easier. But over time, as it's gotten bought and acquired multiple times and is now sitting officially with Wizards of the Coast, the platform itself has really gotten bloated. It has gotten somewhat unwieldy, especially as more and more content is added to it. I think the cracks in the actual like base level infrastructure and build of the site are really starting to show that this was just kind of thrown together to be this cool thing, but it was not initially set up to scale. And we're seeing that more and more and more. And I don't think it's ever been as apparent as it is now with the 2024 rules coming into the site and, a larger amount of third-party content starting to flood into the site. For just the search function itself is not very good. The site itself is missing some very key filters for content. The fact that the encounter builder is still in beta after 6 years. The fact that you cannot even build a 2024 math encounter in the encounter builder, you have to go to the new maps thing, add a bunch of tokens, and then kind of build it in a much less useful UI than the actual encounter builder itself. The fact that the homebrew still looks the exact same as it did when it first came out. Only now they have all the dice rolling integrated. But if you actually go in to edit something, the dice rolling is just these massive chunks of code. and there's no wizard, there's no tutorial, there's nothing. Like, the best thing you can do is basically take an existing item, copy it, delete a bunch of stuff, or try and edit a bunch of stuff, right? One of the things they showed in the video, obviously, Kobold Fight Club. You may have heard of that before. That is an encounter builder that is very, very nice and very easy to use. Obviously, they can't have the official stat blocks in it. It's more of a, here's the thing I put together, and then I pull my book out or just print off the reference sheet or something to use. They also mentioned a website called CritterDB, which is exactly how I would want homebrew to work on D&D Beyond. Like, it allows you to just add in attacks. It does a lot of the math for you. It's a much nicer UI type creation versus a jump in and look at a bunch of code in a bunch of different boxes type creation. So I don't know. Like I said, this is just more of a, I guess, a little bit of a rant, a little bit of a vent for just seeing years and years and years of clutter build up and not seeing the investment I was hoping I would see when Wizards bought the site probably, what, 2 or 3 years ago now at this point. I was hoping to see a lot more investment, but as I've started to look, like, do more games and use more things, Demiplane, I think, is a great example of this. Adam Bradford, the person who originally built D&D Beyond, went and did Demiplane after the acquisition. But they built it in such a way that it was a framework that they could then build upon. And now they've been able to release these character sheets, these nexuses for like a dozen different products, mm-hmm. but all built on that same framework. And it's very usable. It's very user-friendly, very accessible. And they're able to just quickly churn out these different things because it was built like that. It does not seem like D&D Beyond was built like that.
No.
And so it feels like at this point, they would almost be better just starting from scratch and building that framework so that they could build back up and have something extensible and something that could scale, right? To the amount of content I think they're wanting to get in there, because we're, like you said, we're starting to see more third-party stuff, mm-hmm. but the more that comes, the worse it's gonna get. Honestly, like, it's to the point where, like, in the search results or in just the normal encounter builder or even in maps, like, it shows you all the content that you don't even own. Yep. And you click on the thing, it's like, you don't own this. It's like, why am I seeing it then? Or why is there not a filter to get rid of this? And so I don't know. It's I would love to hear people's thoughts on this, just because this is something that's just kind of been building for a while, and I think has become more apparent in the last year with the 2024 stuff adding on and the third party stuff adding on. And it's really made me realize, like, this is not sustainable for mm-hmm. them. And this is going to turn the site into an absolute mess. I mean, it's already kind of a mess, but, and we're still lacking a lot of basic features. Like, there are features that are just not supported on the site. Bastions, not supported in digital at all. A bunch of the subclasses in all these really cool subclasses and these third party things, not supported with 2024 characters, even though they're supposed to be very easy to use an old subclass with one of the new base classes. Mm-hmm. And so that I think part of the problem is just that the back end sucks. The back end is old. It's probably spaghetti code, and doing anything to it is probably way, way more painful and harder than it needs to be. They even told us at one point, the homebrew editor, that's what we use. Like, that's our tools. And it's just like, oh,
you could do better.
You could do better than that. So I don't know. Ben, I don't want to rant forever. And I don't want to treat this as like something bad, but it's more just an observation at this point, because yeah. I use it so heavily. And obviously both of us have found workarounds for things, mm-hmm. and like getting around homebrew things or getting around search things. But I'm really hoping that they listen to some of this feedback. And I really hope in the background they are investing in what is essentially a rebuild, so that they can actually turn this into what I think they want to do and basically make it the new Digital Storefront DMs Guild type thing for 5.5.
Yeah. And I mean, we kind of talked a little bit about this before, just you and I, but they have like a lot of spinning plates right now where, you know, they're bringing in a ton of third party content, which, I mean, that's one of your wishes right there, was we hope to see third party content. And they're really digging deep and bringing a lot in, to the point where it's like, I have so many things that I don't own in this platform anymore, that it's just like, I can't keep up, because, you know, I'm not made of money. So they're doing that. They're coding all that stuff in as well. Also maps into, you know, those different maps and everything, as well as all their new content. They're updating the virtual tabletop, which I will say that has been amazing. Like almost every month or so, there seems to be some sort of update or new feature kind of added to the virtual tabletop. So I'm actually really happy about that, since that's what we use. Then on top of that, you know, all the 2024 stuff, adding in all that information, and then, you know, working on Project Sigil, which who knows anything about that. Like overall, what I'm really hoping is that the reason why the encounter builder hasn't been touched so much, and, you know, maps have been, and then they're working on Sigil and stuff, like, I'm hoping that finally when they kind of get everything to the right point, they can just integrate it all into one. And then that's when we're going to see the big shift of everything. Like, who knows if that's happening or if that's something they're working on or anything at all. But, you know, I kind of hope that something like that happens, because I love creating with the encounter builder. It's great. I love using the maps. The encounter stuff in the maps is great, but I want to still have my encounter builder along with the map. You know, I want to keep them so that they work well, because, you know, when a player changes their hit points in the encounter, it updates in the encounter builder. It doesn't update on the maps yet. But, you know, I can see their AC and like stuff like that. So it's just one of those things where it's like, I wish that there was a way to either connect the encounter that I have to a map so that everything just runs off of that, or whatever, you know, which I don't see why that isn't coming, but who knows? You know, I don't work in IT in a way that would do code or anything like that, so who knows how hard it would be, or what stage they're on, or if it's even doable. But like you said, there are cracks, there are things that this bloat has really, you know, highlighted. And I also hope that, you know, they make the tool that I already love to use just that much better, with a better quality of life to it.
Yep, I completely agree. But yeah, love to hear your thoughts. We'll have that video kind of highlighting some of the stuff we talked about, linked in the show notes on dndiscussions.com as well. Also, I wanted to shout out, just because it's been a while since we talked about a Ginny D video, right?
I mean, it seems like it's every episode at this point. We're just really loving her content lately.
It's just so good. So she has a new one, and it's just it's just a nice video. Like, it's just like, if you want just like a little uplift, or you're having a bad day, or you need just a little ray of sunshine in your life. I got my grandma to play D&D with me, and she basically documentary style gets her 97-year-old grandma to play D&D with her. And it is one of the sweetest things that I have ever watched. And her grandma is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to spoil it because it is super fun. And I love that she takes inspiration from the, and I think we've talked about this at one point, the John Barenthal, Deborah Ann Woll little segment where she basically ran him through a tiny bit of D&D, just no dice right there while they were recording a podcast.
Yeah.
And I really love that. And that clip has been incredible. And I think it just goes to show how good of an idea that is, or how just effective something like that is. So we'll have the link to that video in the show notes as well. Highly recommend it. It's just super fun, and it's just a nice bright spot for your day.
Yeah, definitely recommend it, as we always do with her videos. It made me smile. It gave me some happiness, and it was a nice shining light in the darkness.
And so with that, we will wrap the show up. But of course, the nice thing is we have been able to play a little bit between recording last episode. Ben, were you able to play your campaign?
No, unfortunately, life rolled some nat 20s against me. So originally we were going to be playing on Saturday, but it was too hard to do. What was that?
Voice things.
Yeah.
Sore throats.
And then a whole chunk of the day dealing with a really frustrating problem. I wasn't in the headspace to even like run it at that point. So,
oh my God.
Yeah.
I know those feels. There are definitely times, and DMs, make sure that you self-care as well, because there have been times over the years when it's just like, I have to cancel this session because mm-hmm. I'm not in the right headspace for this.
Yeah.
Or I'm not in like the right mood or something. And if I try and do this, we're all going to suffer. Yeah, we're all going to suffer for it.
Exactly. So now I have a nicely fun and well put together Spider-Man No Way Home final battle Lego set, just kind of sitting right there. The Statue of Liberty head with all the three Spider-Men and everything. It's looking great.
Sometimes you just got to self-care.
Yeah, seriously.
And sometimes that's Legos.
If you need to put order in life, put together a Lego set. How about you, though? Were you able to actually get in there and play?
I was. As I mentioned earlier, I had a really good session of downtime with my characters. It was really fun. It was kind of the aftermath of the big flashback session and dealing with that. And then we took basically what was a week of downtime, and I jumped around between the different characters, and they finally got to explore some of the different pieces of the puzzle, essentially, as well as just do stuff that their characters needed to do. Like, one of my characters was just like, or one of my players was just like, I need to make money. And so it's just like, cool, you're kind of a detective investigator guy. Let's check and see, you know, what your case stuff looks like. Roll, you know, your investigation with advantage. He rolled two nat 20s.
Oh, nice.
So he got the best case with the best payout.
Was that, it a, you know, a blonde bombshell coming in, silhouetted by lights, smoking a cigarette and knocking on the glass inspector's door, or PI,
I mean, kind
of.
It was an insurance fraud case. Ooh. with a widower who murdered his partner for
murder
insurance. Yeah, so it was fun. It was just like, but again, like we didn't play it out or anything. It was just a little side thing, but it fit really well. It was super funny. Double that 20s does not happen very often. He got the biggest payout, the biggest case of the potentials for that little section. So that was really fun. One of the characters got to have some really good interactions with. So one of the players, their character is a dad. Their kids are grown up for the most part, right? So one of them was back visiting. One of them kind of still lives in the area. And so got to have some really good interactions between him and some of his kid NPC characters. Oh,
that's good.
Which was really, really fun. And so I feel like all of them are just honestly, there's a lot of like family type interaction. That's kind of the fun thing about doing a city campaign in such a big area. But yeah, it was really good interaction, really good role play. We got a lot of boxes checked that we had just been kind of needing to do, but everything had been so hectic with the story that no one had gotten time to catch a breath, right? And so yeah, it was a lot of fun. We're all set up for kind of the next section of the campaign, and I'm excited to get into that.
Very cool. I'm happy for you. It sounds like it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. We'll also potentially be playing with the Bastion system a little bit. We're going to be discussing it with, because some of them actually have, you know, like permanent residence and such. So we're going to start discussing that a little bit as well and seeing where that might fit in or slot in with how things are going.
Very cool. Well, I'm very curious about your experience with it, since it's not something that we can really work on in my campaign at the moment, especially since we haven't swapped to 2024. So we'll kind of see, you know, what that experience is like from the ground up through you. I'm excited for that.
Yeah, that would be a nice thing for D&D Beyond to support. Hint, hint. D&D Beyond supporting Bastions digitally.
Yeah, add it as a sheet to the character sheet.
It makes so much sense.
Yeah.
It makes so much sense. But anyways, that is going to be it for this episode. Thank you everyone so much for listening and for joining us today. And as always, Ben, before we head out, why don't you tell everyone where we can be reached?
You bet. So as we were speaking about it before, you can always reach out to us on our Discord. Now we're going to have a link to that on dndiscussions.com, which is our website where you can find every single episode we have ever done. As well as links to our community pages and all that fun stuff, as well as our socials, which link to Discord, you need that. A link to our D&D Discussions Blue Sky account, which is at D&D Discussions, you can find that. A link to Ryan's Blue Sky, which is at TBK Zord, or a link to mine, which is at Ben Bumhofer. On top of that, you can always email us if you don't want to, you know, have your question be public on a Discord server, or, you know, you don't want to reach out on Blue Sky or something. You can send those emails to dndiscussions@gmail.com. Definitely recommend sending those in. We love hearing from you all. As for your podcast players of choice, guess what? Where you're listening to this, you're going to be able to find every other episode. So, you know, take a listen, give us a 5-star review if you like, you know, fun stuff like that. Also, if you're wondering what it's like to hear me play Dungeons and Dragons, I am on +5 to Hit, an actual play podcast where currently I am DMing. I am taking us on a little tiny hiatus. DM'd our second session on Monday, which was a lot of fun. We had a good time, and the characters fell in love with an NPC I just made up. So I was really happy about that. It's always a fun thing to do. So we'll be, you know, doing a couple more episodes of me DMing and then jumping back into a continuation of our characters from Rime of the Frostmaiden. So check out +5 to Hit to hear me DM and tell me how horrible I am or how much you'd like to play my game. You know, either or, whichever. That being said, though, this is D&D Discussions. Thank you very much for joining us and supporting us in every way that you do, by listening, telling your friends, randomly mentioning it to some, you know, people on the street. Who knows what you do, but we appreciate it. Ryan, thank you very much for being very flexible with your schedule this week. I really recommend it. And I really think that it is much better that people hear me speak like this instead of like this the entire time, like it was a day or two ago. So, you know, I appreciate that greatly. As for everybody else, thank you very much again for listening. And always remember to roll high and be good to each other.
Take care, and we'll see you soon.